From the authentic soul of Bernie Siegel, MD, comes Mind Health Matters, a show that reflects Bernie's passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges, not just the physical ones, so that each person can live life fully with the understanding that, as Bernie reminds us, we only have today. Believing that we are all here to love one another, each in our own unique way, Bernie has crafted eternal truths and the timeless wisdom of the ages. Join Bernie as he shares his powerful journey through life while offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom.
Hello,
welcome everyone. Yes, to Mind Health Matters with thee, Dr. Bernie Siegel, who has all kinds of stories through all the years of his medical experience and with his family. And we are here today welcoming everyone on the Dream Vision 7 radio network. We're a syndicated Boston-based internet radio station. You can listen to us just about any platform that you're used to using. Whether it's Spreaker, TuneIn, our station itself, you can listen online, you can listen in your cars these days, and on any of the apps that you may have, including ours. Well, Dr. Bernie has an excellent guest today, Dr. Rob Rutledge. He is a radiation oncologist in Halifax, Nova Scotia. He specializes in breast, prostate, and pediatric cancers. He's also an associate professor in the Faculty of Medicine at Dalhousie University. And he is the CEO and chair of the Healing and Cancer Foundation, a registered charity that freely offers educational videos, documentaries, webcasting. He's also the co-author of the book, The Healing Circle. It captures the teachings and inspirational stories from these weekend retreats. Rob has received a Cancer Care Nova Scotia Award for Excellence in Patient Care, and Doctors Nova Scotia presented him with a Health Promotion Award in recognition of his contribution to physician health and health promotion in cancer patients. And so, Dr. Bernie, it's over to you.
Okay,
and welcome Dr.
You.
Rob.
Rob,
I want to start out with a Bernie story.
Well, can you hold on a moment? Because I'll tell a Bernie story. Because listening to the introduction, you know, of how you've received awards and respect, and when I was writing my first book, Love, Medicine, and Miracles, and doing all these things, I got in many magazines with this word, the controversial Dr. Siegel.
Mm.
And I mean, some of the interviews really knocked me out because every time I'd say something, everybody'd argue with me. And it is so nice to see how medicine has changed. And that was some of what
I was going to discuss
with you. But go ahead. Say whatever you'd like.
Here's the Bernie story. I mean, how did I get here? This is like, how did that happen? Well, first of all, the society has changed as well, so that what you've been proposing is the norm in some circles, and certainly in the medical circles are starting to adopt that, you know, holistic perspective. But I wanted to tell you my Bernie story, so because Bernie has so many great stories. There I was. I grew up in northern Canada. My mom was an elementary school teacher. My dad was in the military. He had a grade 8 education. And I went to University of Toronto Medical School. This is the mid-1980s. Very physical medicine, like just, you know, get the information, diagnosis, physical treatment, et cetera, et cetera. And I was hungering for something more. And I thought about psychiatry, thought about working with people with addictions. And then the universe conspired and a book fell off the shelf and Bernie wrote it, Love, Medicine, and Miracles. And I knew right from that moment of like the looking at that book and the electricity coming through my hand at that moment, I knew I wanted to be an oncologist and I knew I wanted to run support groups. And so it's just been a wonderful, you know, 25, 30 year journey now to have that transpire and to fulfill that dream of a young medical student. But Bernie started us out, went from controversial to you know, controversial not to be thinking in those bigger holistic pictures. So thank you so much to start things out.
You're welcome, Rob. And because I was in a sense going to test you with these questions. Are you ever criticized or corrected by patients, family, and nurses?
Corrected in what way?
Well, if they say something, for instance, if a patient said to you, you didn't answer my question, or there's a more comfortable position I could lie down in for the treatment, or, you know, brought something up.
Oh, yeah, for certain. I'm human. I often fall short, and I'm always trying to listen to that person in front of me to give them the best care. So, yes, they do correct me.
I ask you that question so all our listeners will understand that's how you know you have a good doctor. Because all of the most caring physicians, when I say, are you ever criticized by patients, family, and nurses, they all say yes. And the people and their family look astonished, or the nurses, like, why am I being rude and asking that? But I always say, I'm pointing out to you, they're learning from the experience of their patients, you know, what nurses can tell them. And for a while in the hospital, I was really upset because I was being, you know, corrected so often by nurses. Mm. And I finally said to one of them, what am I, the worst doctor in the hospital? She said, what are you talking about? She said, you're always telling me how to do it better. And she said, yeah, we know you care and you listen, so we tell you. And boy, I'm so glad I mentioned that, you know, brought it up, because it changed my whole perspective. And after that, I had no problem with a patient saying you didn't answer my question, or, you know, whatever, or I need a hug, or whatever it was.
Agreed.
And why did you pick, well, I got to tell you about a medical student, first of all, who's also a radiation oncologist in Georgia named Matt Mumber. Yeah.
Yep, I met him.
He sent me a book of poetry he wrote. Pardon?
Yeah. I said I went to the same weekend seminar with him in 1990 when I first met you in person. I'm going to tell you another Bernie story. So at the start of the weekend, I'm sitting in the front row. It's for people who've had a cancer diagnosis, their loved ones, probably 150 people in the auditorium. I'm this green medical student. I'm like, oh, this is so good. What's Bernie Siegel going to teach these guys? How's he going to start the seminar? So I was sitting in the front row. And you walk up to the microphone, and you're really kind of plainly dressed, kind of a nice-looking kind of T-shirt type of scenario with a collar and so on. And you come up to the microphone, and you say, hi, my name is Bernie Siegel. I'd like to start out with each of you introducing yourself. You, sir, at the back, can you please start us out? And it was 150 people over about 2 hours telling their stories. And I remember there was a young guy, he was like in tears, sobbing, holding on to his mom who had an ovarian cancer diagnosis. And I also remember this woman who had gone to the hospital staff and got a dead chicken. And she, when it came to her turn, she reached into her bag and she hoisted out this chicken, kind of whirled it around a little bit and said, you know, you have to use humor in the cancer story. And then people were laughing and, you know, crying. And then by the time it got to me in the front row, I kind of stood up and looked back at the audience and I said to them, you know, I'm a medical student and I learned more in the last 2 hours about the real influence of cancer in a person's life than I did in all the medical school. And so there the learning had begun.
Right. I forget all these crazy things I did. And even how different it is. See, if you were practicing radiation oncology in Manhattan, you would be treating people a lot differently than where you are now or where Matt is down in Georgia. And literally, when I would get up to speak, I started insulting people in New York if I was doing a conference in New York. You know, you're the most insensitive people. You don't pay attention to feelings. You don't. And after about 10 or 15 minutes, finally, somebody would raise their hand and say, look, I didn't come here to be insulted. I paid for this workshop. And I said, good, now we'll begin. I finally got through to you. And then they'd laugh. But I pointed out to them how they could sit and listen to this. And literally, we know in the United States that in Montana, the survival rate for cancers is better than in Manhattan.
Mm.
You know, because same who's taking care of you? Yeah, somebody who knows you and does it with compassion, you know, and treats you like a person. And
exactly.
Again, part of why I keep presenting you with questions is, you know, about criticism, which I never saw as a negative statement. You know, I say they were coaching you. That's a better way of saying it. And also, I would say draw yourself working as a doctor. And let me mention Matt, because he drew, while a medical student, first of all, let me tell you the tragic part. His whole class is sitting in the auditorium, and I said to everybody, okay, draw yourself working as a doctor, and then they handed me the pictures. One picture had no human beings in it at all, just equipment. Every other picture except one, the individual was sitting behind a desk with a diploma on the wall. No patients, no other human beings. One boy drew himself kneeling in front of a wheelchair with his arm around the patient, handing her a tissue. And to me, that's what being a doctor is about, you know, caring for people. But, you know, when you become a doctor to treat a disease, and this has been going on for hundreds of years, and as Jung said, the diagnosis helps the doctor, but it doesn't help the patient. For there, the key thing is the story. And let me also add to the radiation. But anyway, Matt drew three pictures. Because I would have said to him, be a family doctor. You're such a nice guy and, you know, oriented to people. But the family doctor picture showed how busy he was, so he wasn't in the background with his wife and three children. I mean, he wasn't married then, okay? So I'll talk about that in a minute. But in the future, he drew a family. He was with them, and he was with his patients. As a surgeon, he was the only one in the picture, standing there, you know, with a mask and a gown
alone.
On. And as a radiation oncologist, he wasn't touching his patient. I mean, he was touching his patient, as he wasn't when he was the family doctor. And really, you know, it was a much more compassionate scene. So I said to him, Matt, I'm surprised, but I'd say go ahead and be a radiation oncologist. A few years later, I get a call from him saying, we're having a problem. I just... sharing with you, my wife hasn't become pregnant, and we don't know what we're going to do. I said, Matt, you're going to have three kids. It was in your drawing. I can't tell you if they're adopted or not, but you'll have three children. And shortly thereafter, she became pregnant, and they now have three children. And to me, again, it's why I say to patients, draw yourself receiving your treatment. Because I've had people draw God as a source of radiation, and others, you know, as it coming from hell. And one more story, then I'll stop for a minute. Because a radiation oncologist came up to me in the hallway and said, oh, God, I feel terrible. I said, what's the matter? He said, I just did my monthly routine inspection of the machine, and there's no radioactive material in it. I haven't treated anybody for a month. I said, are you an idiot? He said, no, I'm not an idiot. What are you asking me a question like that for? I said, how come you didn't know you weren't treating anybody? I said, obviously they were all having side effects and reactions as if they were being treated. And I had to hold him up. I thought he was going to pass out because it never occurred to him that people were, in a sense, hypnotized by their beliefs and acted as if they were being treated. And then the other side of the coin, and why I mention this so everybody listening, can be one of Siegel's crazy patients. I get a phone call again, radiation oncologist. Bernie, I have your patient here, and I've been treating her, and I thought the machine was broken because she has no side effects to the treatment. But then I saw your name in the chart, so I knew, oh, it's not the machine, it's a crazy patient. And he said, I went into her, and I said, how come you don't react to the radiation? She said, I get out of the way and let it go to my tumor. Those are her exact words. And that's how things began to change at the hospital, because nobody was against patients doing well. What they were against at first was Siegel's crazy beliefs, but the patients convinced them that my beliefs were not crazy. So how do you work this in to what you're doing?
on the day-to-day, well, do you know what? If you looked at me as a radiation oncologist, you know, connecting with people, trying to serve people as best as possible, it probably wouldn't be that much different than, you know, watching other radiation oncologists work here in the clinic. Mind you, I mean, I do, just to, you know, the quick aside, I tell the medical students, first of all, we connect human to human, right? It's, I may have a role as a radiation oncologist, but that person in front of me who I'm serving is also just a human being. And so we connect human to human. And so if the person's crying, what would you do if, like, a friend of yours was crying? Would you sit back and just watch them cry? Or would you, like, offer a Kleenex or put a hand on the shoulder, you know, hand around their whatever? You would do something. So why not connect human to human? Next is you're connecting as a physician to this person in front of you, right? And so you're trying to see a bigger picture. How can I serve this patient? Maybe I need to refer them to somebody else. And then you're connecting as an oncologist with your expertise around oncology. And finally, as a radiation oncologist with specific expertise. But ultimately, it's just two human beings connecting, trying to figure out what's best for them and having that kind of humility on that side. I do want to, because you started out with this, you know, you were on, you know, the magazine Time, you know, controversial mm-hmm. physician, and society is kind of caught up. Because when, I mean, I was in the 1980s was physical medicine, and then like, there might be quality of life issues. So early 90s, I remember kind of this issue of quality of life. Maybe we shouldn't, you know, do a huge operation and remove that guy's throat so he can't talk and he can't, you know, he can't go swimming with his kids or can't go fishing because, you know, he would drown with, you know, his laryngectomy. And then there's this kind of health promotion that came in. Oh, maybe we can actually influence the outcomes by doing exercise, watching our diet. So slowly the society is evolving. And then it was like the emotional aspects of cancer, right? That the emotional distress, the stress, et cetera, the distress screening was early 2000s. And so you can see how society is changing. And then science starts to merge with something I would call spirituality. And they're mm-hmm. finally catching up with you, Bernie, 30, 40 years later. You know, so this is, you know, people are interested in spirituality from a secular perspective and not necessarily within a narrow range of what they've been brought up with. So there's that's happened over the years. And the last thing I would say is go ahead. Go ahead. For another story. Yeah.
I got a kick out of it because a few months ago there was a study done, and they were doing all the things I did with patients, you know, visualizing, meditating, all kinds of mind-body stuff. And they said, oh, it was wonderful. These people recovered sooner and saved $3,000 on average. And I had to laugh. It's like, yeah, and I was doing this 40 years ago, and everybody said I was nuts. You know,
but everybody would also say it's intuitive. The lay public would say that's intuitive. You take care of yourself.
Yeah, the patients weren't the problem. Yeah. It was the doctors who were.
Administration. So then now we're into this phase, and this has been my 30-life-year journey, is what are the attributes of the remarkable cancer survivors? And you named it like strongly in your book right back in the mid-'80s. But again, there you go. So Alistair Cunningham, who's a PhD scientist, University of Toronto, did the Healing Journey program, looked prospectively at if people actually did the work and take care of themselves. These patients all had an average survival time of a year as assessed by outside physician. And people could improve their longevity by a factor of three, meaning 3 years of longevity versus a year if they actually took care of themselves. And two of his patients were the remarkable cancer survivors. There were breast cancer spread to bone, endometrial cancer spread to bone. You wouldn't expect them alive 20 years later, and yet they were writing him cards 20 years later to say, I'm still doing great. There's no evidence of cancer. And so there's a sign.
And let me interrupt for one second. See, the term that the doctor then says is, oh, look, they had a spontaneous remission. Right. And Solzhenitsyn, in his book Cancer Ward, uses the term self-induced healing. Amongst all the men with cancer, one of them says, oh, look what it says here in his book. There are cases of self-induced healing. And that's the part that psychiatrists understand, because when they help people, they see the benefit of a certain personality in survival. But oncologists don't look at it that way.
They can't. Yeah, they don't. They just treat the physicality of the disease. And so then that's, you know, most recently you would know Kelly Turner, who's PhD from Berkeley, California, did this interviews of hundreds of patients who have undergone what she called radical remission, because she like, you know, you and I don't believe in the spontaneous part of it. And there are certain attributes, again, of people who do extremely well. And that's been my 30-year journey. What are those attributes, and how can I help facilitate that type of care? How can I empower people with the information and the skills and the attitude and the possibility to say they can profoundly influence their health and happiness? I'm not promising a cure necessarily, but they can profoundly influence, and it's possible. It's always possible.
Yeah.
That's what I
think. You follow your heart. I mean, I began meeting people who I thought were dead at lectures I gave. And I'd always run down off the stage at the end and say, hey, why didn't you come back? You know, and it wasn't me that they were trying to avoid, but they said, what's the point of going back, you know, and all you get is negative news? So, but I said, how come you didn't die? And they always had a story of how they changed their life, from moving to canceling the dress code at work. One millionaire said, because I asked him, why are you dressed like that? He said, they tell you a few months to live, you know, you cancel the dress code. So he lived for over 5 years, you know, buying a house on the ocean, getting a dog. They all had a story. And it wasn't about not dying. It was about enjoying the time they had left.
Right.
Oh, yeah, one wonderful letter I got from a lady.
Hold that that thought with that letter, Bernie.
All right.
We need to take our first break.
Thank you. Everyone stay with us.
We'll be back more with Dr. Bernie Siegel, who is heard Wednesday through Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every week, Wednesday through Friday, 12 p.m. and 12 a.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Darkest hours to brightest moments, transformation from despair to happiness, and chaos to clarity. Real people, real pain, real healing. Life-threatening illness, death, abusive relationships, divorce, and overcoming addiction are challenges these men and women faced head-on. See how they emerged stronger and happier. Buy the new book, Chaos to Clarity, Sacred Stories of Transformational Change by Reverend Patricia Caginello and Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis. Available on sacredstoriespublishing.com and worldwide through Amazon and other retailers.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and Faith, Hope, and Healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles. Ever wonder what it's like to have your own radio show? Well, wonder no longer, because you can dip into the radio airwaves by being host for the day on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. It's a fabulous way to get your radio feet wet. It's an opportunity to market your business, modality, or book. Have a guest, mention a sponsor, and take callers. Or you may want to facilitate a lesson by going solo. It's up to you. Listeners can be online, mobile, in cars with Bluetooth, or listen through Amazon's Echo by asking, Alexa, play Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. For more details, go to DreamVision7Radio.com and click on Host for the Day.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And we are back. You're listening to Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel, and his guest today is Dr. Rob Rutledge. He is a radiation oncologist in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Excuse me. And he is co-author of The Healing Circle. You can get in touch with him by going on the site. It's healingandcancer.org. Healingandcancer.org. And to get in touch with Dr. Bernie, you can go on his site, Bernie Siegel, SIEGELMD.com, BernieSiegelMD.com. And I'd like to mention that Bernie has three new books out. He has a couple with Sacred Stories Publishing. One is Three Men, Six Lives, which just the title is interesting. And the other one is When You Realize How Perfect Everything Is, a conversation about life between grandfather and grandson. And then the third one is published by Hay House, and it's No Endings, Only Beginnings, A Doctor's Notes on Living, Loving, and Learning Who You Are. Okay, so back to you, Bernie, and going to talk about a letter.
Right. I worked hard to remember that. this woman sent me a letter in the office, and it said, I bought a dog, I put in a backyard wildlife habitat, I laughed more, I took vitamins, and I didn't die. And it ends with, and now I'm so busy, I'm killing myself. Help, where do I go from here? And I burst out laughing, and I told her to take a nap. But, you know, she started doing all these things in order to not die, and now she's exhausted. But that's the part I always saw. You know, when you call up to ask, how come I wasn't invited to the funeral, and the person you think is dead answered the phone. And he said, oh, it was so beautiful here, I forgot to die, because he moved to Colorado from where he lived in our area on the East Coast. And because he said, I want to die in the mountains. And then a year later, he isn't dead, and he's enjoying life. And that's why I try to keep empowering people. Oh, and then I got this from doctors. You're giving false hope. I said, what is false hope? I mean, if you buy a lottery ticket, you could win. It's not likely, but you could. And I said, what I'm trying to let people know is, what are the patterns of behavior of people who exceed expectations? So they can look at their lives. And as one lawyer said, I never wanted to be a lawyer. My parents drove me crazy. I became a lawyer. I want to play a violin. So you have cancer, you quit being a lawyer, and you go join an orchestra and play a violin, and then you notice, I didn't die when I was supposed to. So all these stories are not coincidences. You're changing your body chemistry. That the mind is powerful, that the body believes what the mind is conceiving of, and what an enormous difference it then makes in the person. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, no, I'm just, I completely endorse what you're saying, Bernie. It's a certain paradox, actually, and it's a strange thing to say and to try to describe, but it's like wanting to live, like wanting to kind of fully enjoy your life maximally and do what your heart and spirit wants you to do, and not care about whether you die or not. So it's like a paradox, and one of the attributes of the remarkable cancer survivors is that they put their energy into the things they can control and let go of the things they can't control. So we don't know what's going to happen in the future, but we can focus our energy and attention on loving the people in our lives, listening to our heart, and doing the things that bring us joy, and let our own light, into this world, And you just had the last sentence there, which is when you get into that space, I think that really releases some type of healing potential within the body, and that's the ground of where the miracle happens in my mind. But to grasp for a particular outcome just causes more distress. It's better to say, you know, whether I have another 6 months to live or I have another, you know, 106 months to live or 300 months to live, how do I want to live my life today? That's the question that we need to point people towards.
Right.
And that's...
You want to give your body a live message.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Monday morning, we have heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't love your life, you don't love your job, you don't want... So your body does you a favor. Let's make you sick, then you don't have to go to work. Or let's end your life, then you don't have to ever do this again. Which is bizarre and crazy. But... when you're doing what you love
crazy,
to do, you said it very nicely about your heart, because one woman put on her refrigerator, when you live in your heart, magic happens. And for her, it did too. You know, it's not thinking, it's feeling what to do.
Yeah.
And doing the right thing. Let me just mention, because some of the drawings that pop into my head. One drawing, the woman drew herself, her treatment, her cancer, and she wrote, "I hate you." I said, "Oh, you hate the cancer?" "No, I hate my doctor. They made me bald, ugly, and horrible. I feel sorry for my cancer, what we're going through." And that's the part that, you know, doctors don't think about or look into. It's all the side effects and problems. But if they could help her change her image, as I say, like Siegel's crazy patients... They had chemotherapy and no side effects. As a matter of fact, in my family, my mother had leukemia. And she, boy, she lived my sermons. She was incredible.
Wow.
She changed all her doctors. They started learning from her. And one day she said to me, "Oh, I got to go for a blood count. You know, I can't sit here with you." I said, "What do you need a blood count for?" She said, "Don't you remember? I have leukemia." And I said, "Ma, I forgot." I mean, because she wasn't living like somebody with cancer, if you know what I mean. She was enjoying life.
You just don't see that person
life.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. I just wanted to add how the science is catching up with what you're talking about. This is an amazing experiment that it's hard to believe, but essentially I try to describe this. So it's an experiment where they have the participants hooked up so that they can measure the electricity around their heart. And they also have the different monitors around their brain, like an EEG around their brain. And a computer program, so they're looking at a screen, and a computer program randomly chooses amongst two types of pictures. One, the grotesque, awful, horrific picture, and the other set is a picture that, like, beautiful, lovely, healing images. And so the participant doesn't know beforehand what type of image is going to come up. And they started measuring the heart waves, the heart energy waves, and the brain waves. And what they recognized is that the heart actually recognized the type of picture before the brain did. So your heart has a kind of mind center of itself before the brain can actually engage. And then what's really super exciting about this experiment, and it starts to talk about something that's more profound, is that even before the computer decided on the randomization between the awful picture and the nice picture, the heart actually responded to the type of picture. So it was a precognition of what was actually going to happen in the future. The heart energy is the recipient and the transmitter of the love energy and the wisdom energy. And that's part of what your teaching has been all over these years, is that we need to listen to our hearts, because there's a guidance there that is much bigger than our brains.
Right. And when you think about it, women outlive men.
Bigger than what we've been taught.
Yeah. But relationships, I've had men in my office say, "I can't work, what's the point of living?" And women say, "I can't die till they're all married and out of the house." And again, doctors need to realize that. You know, I've had them say, "Well, it must be the hormones. The female hormones is protecting these women from..." I said, "No, it ain't the hormones. It's their relationships." And all the studies that are done with people, whether it's caring for plants or animals,
right?
Besides
yep.
people. I had one one family. I got to tell you this one. This lady, she came in with, you know, she had cancer, and all her adult children came with her. Our mother has 12 cats. We don't visit her because her house stinks. So we'll clean the house, get rid of the cats, and then you can start her cancer therapy. I said, no. They look at me. No, what are you talking about? You get rid of the cats, your mother's dead.
Right.
I said, you tell your mother nobody wants 12 cats. Then she can't die. And I can tell you, they were so happy with me in all the, you know, time after that. I said, yes, yeah. go in and clean the house, but don't get rid of the cats. And they could
right.
see how their mother went on and, you know, couldn't die, because what would you do with 12 cats? So it's just so obvious to people how they connect their
right.
feelings, loving their bodies,
yeah,
too.
Agreed. The self-care, self-love is a kind of a foundational piece to this. And I'm also just
right.
thinking about the listeners who are, you know, hearing those stories. Maybe they're in a job scenario which they don't like necessarily, but they have to do it, et cetera, et cetera. We all have the choice to choose how we want to respond
right.
to our circumstances. We all
yep.
have the choice to love that next person who comes in the room. And sometimes we have to disagree. Sometimes we have to put up our boundaries. But love can be the kind of starting point in which we connect with other people. So we all have this piece of the universe. We're all part of that bigger puzzle. We all have our own
yeah.
space. And we all have the choice to choose how we want to live our lives. And when we
and we're all wounded,
meaning,
too.
Yes.
You know, so to share.
Absolutely.
I mean, one other thing, I don't know if you do this, but please do. I would say to people, what words would you use to describe what you're experiencing?
Mm.
And I said, I don't want your diagnosis. What are you going through?
Right.
I don't know what got me
yeah.
doing this. Maybe something somebody said one day. But the words you hear, I realized, were always about their life and what needed to be eliminated.
Mm, right.
So when somebody yeah. said pressure, okay, what else in your life is causing pressure?
Mm.
You've got to eliminate that.
Yeah.
And one of the
right.
most significant was this woman who said failure. I said, how does that fit your life? Well, my body failed. I have cancer. I said, that's not my question.
Mm.
How does failure fit your life? Oh, my parents committed suicide when I was a child. I must have been a failure as a child. And and a lot of the reporters who came to write critical articles about this controversial, you know, crazy doctor, I would get them to draw pictures. And that shook them up. Because as one reporter drew a clock with one hand on it pointed at 12 in the background. I said, what happened when you were 12 years old? I don't like deadlines. I said, there's only one hand on the clock. What happened? And then she fell apart because she had been sexually abused when she was 12. And I can tell you, the
yeah.
interview changes, you know. Then suddenly,
yep.
wow, maybe he isn't as crazy as I think. And one more point.
Well,
that
hold
I
that
very
thought,
important.
Bernie, because we're
okay.
off for the last break. Everyone stay with us. Don't go away. More with Dr. Bernie Siegel and his guest, Dr. Rob.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every week, Wednesday through Friday, 12 p.m. and 12 a.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Looking for a fun and relaxing getaway? Omega's Rest and Rejuvenation Retreats are a great way to unwind and renew your spirit. Stroll through the garden, relax by the lake, or try a daily yoga or movement class. You can stretch your body, quiet your mind, and do as much or as little as you choose. Located in Rhinebeck, New York, just 90 miles north of New York City, Omega's natural environment and quiet pace allow for extraordinary experiences to unfold. Learn more at eomega.org.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and Faith, Hope, and Healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And we are back. If you'd like to get in touch with Dr. Rob Rutledge, you can go on his site, healingandcancer.org. He also has a podcast of his own called Spirituality and Cancer. And Dr. Bernie has been his guest, is actually a three-part series with him. So check that out. And back to you, Bernie.
Okay, the one more thing I found, I don't know if you, this has happened with you too, Rob, because I know, you know, we talked about Matt Mumber, he does retreats with patients and things, but when I started doing this years ago, you know, you'd get a call, I want to join your cancer group, all right, you have to draw some pictures, you have to read a book, and then answer a bunch of questions that I had printed out, you know, about their lives and all, and then I'll look those over and you come in. Okay. I'm not an artist, though, and I don't know if I have time to read a book. And, you know, maybe 6 weeks later or 2 months later, that person would show up. And then you'd get people who'd say, hey, I want to come to your cancer group. Where is it? I said, there's one tomorrow. All right. I'll come. No, wait a minute. You have to fill out, you know, a questionnaire.
All this stuff.
You have to draw a picture. You have to read a book. Okay, fine. I'll stay up tonight and do it. That's the thing I began to see. People were so afraid of failing, doing it wrong. I mean, I'm trying to help you with cancer, and literally on the picture it said, I had my 12-year-old son draw this because I'm not good at drawing. Lady, you're afraid to draw a picture and you're supposed to be able to get over cancer? It's just so incredible how worried people were about doing it wrong.
Yep, and you know, it takes work, right? If you want to be the remarkable cancer survivor, you want to do way better than expected, then you do your work. You learn, you figure out the medical system, you advocate for yourself, you talk with the different healers, you do your reading, and then you actually do the work, which is go see a counselor, talk with somebody, talk about those inner feelings, you know, because as you said, Bernie, we all are perfectly imperfect. We're all the wounded healers within ourselves. It reminds me of this beautiful image. It was an artist from Chicago, and I'm sorry I forgot his name. He had suffered some bad injuries. I think he was wheelchair bound, and as part of an art project, he had a perfect sphere made out of marble and had it drop from like a two-story building, and it fell on the ground and the cement and cracked into several pieces. And then he took glue made out of a gold substance and glued all these fragments of the marble together to create slightly oddly shaped sphere. And the art piece was called Broken Yet Whole. And that's what we are. We are all broken yet whole. We all struggle. We all suffer. And oftentimes we put on the mask of, you know, having it together. But the fact is we're perfectly imperfect. We're wounded. Yeah. And when we open that up and when we're vulnerable and authentic to other people, it's like taking the shackles off and just being yourself. And you want to release that kind of healing energy within your life, then you learn to be authentic in your relationships and with yourself. I'm preaching more than telling stories.
But if you put a bandage on every patient who come in will treat you differently because they now see you're wounded. You have something wrong, and it's visible to them, so they can talk to you. When I shaved my head in the 1970s, which was an issue about really faith and uncovering, I was burying all my pain. Everybody in the hospital came to talk to me. I didn't realize it at that point, you know, what the hell was going on here, because I hadn't gotten into all this. But I'd come on, you know, to the floor to see my patients, and nurses, other patients, staff would all be lining up. Can I talk to you for a minute? I thought, what the hell is this? And then I realized, oh, they know I'm not normal.
Right.
You know, so they're not afraid to me about their problems. Yeah. And I'll tell you, it was one of the best things that ever happened, though it embarrassed our family. Because in those days, the hair was down to the shoulders with our kids. And then their father shaves his head. But truthfully, later, I was reading Jung again. It said, monks shave their head as a symbol of uncovering spirituality. And I realized, you know, if you'd been in therapy, you wouldn't have had to shave your head. You'd understand yourself better. But it's been a lifetime issue. Deb mentioned the book, Three Men, Six Lives. I had a past life experience when a friend of mine on the phone said to me, you're so busy, why are you living this life? And I went into a trance and saw myself killing with a sword. And I said to her, wow, maybe that's why I became a surgeon, to help people with a knife. But I keep writing so that people will know what the truth is about life.
Yes.
You know? And just to understand it. And the negative side, then I'll try to hold my breath a minute, a fellow with lung cancer developed cataracts. And I was trying to help him. And he said, you know, it's really ruining my life. I can't play with the grandchildren. I like betting on horses, and now I can't read the paper. So he went to an eye doctor who said, okay, we'll fix the cataract surgery. Then he gets a letter from his insurance company. We are not paying for cataract surgery. You'll be dead in 6 months due to lung cancer, so we're not going to pay for cataract surgery. He went home, got into bed, and died in 5 days. And I told his family, sue the insurance company. And they did.
Ouch, yeah.
But that's how, again, your mind, you know, his life now had no meaning, so what's the point of living? And, you know, when you got inspiration and reasons, your body gets the message.
And Bernie, I want to follow up because, I mean, you continue to be controversial in some senses, and you're actually the leader in this side. But, you know, science is supporting it. And the reason why I'm saying this is there's now a huge literature on near-death experiences, right?
Oh, yeah, I had one.
As a four-year-old, right? And almost choked
right.
to death in a toy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what was that space like when you kind of left your body? How did you feel at that moment?
Oh, beautiful and wonderful.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Your consciousness is still alive. You know, I always say I was seeing the boy on the bed dying, and I realized, why didn't you say you're seeing yourself? But that's what impressed me. I never said I was dying. I always said the boy on the bed. And, you know, so it taught me a lot to have that experience. But seeing, thinking, the first words out of my mouth when I didn't choke, because I have an angel who did a Heimlich maneuver, so everything came flying out. I took a breath, and I yelled, who did that? Hey, I'm 4 years old. I prefer being dead, if you don't mind. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and, I mean, this is what's happening, you know, so that science is being brought into modern day. So people with advanced cancer who are very likely going to die, who have an incredible fear of death, there's a whole program of psychedelic drugs and kind of supportive therapy. And I think 80% of the people who go through that program come back after the experience with no longer having fear of death, of dying, or fear of death. So the point is that there's much more there than we understand. And there's the near-death literature that says that there, you know, the life something, our consciousness, something transcends the physical body.
Right.
And if we could do our work and understand that, then there'd be a lot less grief around death and dying, which is also a natural part of it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, my wife, I don't know if you knew this, my wife died about 2.5 years ago. Her birthday's tomorrow, 9/9. And, I mean, after she died, I believe in the paranormal because it became normal. She was in touch with me. She used to kiss me goodnight with a, I always say to people, blow out a candle. I'd be lying in bed, I'd hear, and I'd feel a breeze on my face. And then we were married on the 11th. I have found a dime and a penny in incredible places, and including under the sheets and blankets on the bed. When I was making the bed, I felt the sheets and blankets pulled out of my hands and thrown on the other side of the bed, and there's a dime and a penny. And I'll make this short. When I went to the hospital, she's born 9/9. I walk in the emergency room because 9 months after she died, my heartbeat became irregular, auricular fibrillation. And I knew it was because the person I loved died, and my heart is suffering. And I walk in the emergency room. They said, put him in room 9. I knew my wife's watching over me. They said, we don't have a room in the hospital for you yet. The next day, we got one, room 819. And then I looked at my wristband, and my hospital, well, my identification number at Yale is 8, which is a number for a new beginning, and then 996633. And every single wristband I have, everything always adds up to 9. My number, of course, stays the same, but even the you know, diagnosis visit number adds up to 9. Yep. And I've saved all of them because I know somebody's watching me. You know, our family becomes a believer when all these so-called coincidences keep happening.
Well, Bernie, I do, because I know the interview is going to be coming to a close at some time soon. I do want to thank you, though, because I think what you've done is been able to model an openness and, you know, you're also connected with the world that transcends the physical, and that you're sharing those stories and normalizing that and recognizing that we can all tap into that as well. So I just want to thank you for what you've done over all those years.
You're welcome.
And looking forward to reading the last three books. I haven't read the last three books
because
yet.
I always say if I experience something, it has to be real and true. I mean, I mentioned I have an angel. I met my angel in a meditation.
George.
And I didn't believe in all that stuff when I did it. But people have seen my angel next to me. Some have drawn his picture. Yeah. Others have simply described him. And it blew my mind. You know, when they come up to me and say, there's a man standing in front of you for the entire lecture, so I drew his picture. And I knew that it wasn't my typical lecture. I was just talking and talking. Like somebody else was doing it, and I was just putting out the words. But we all need to be open to that, but it requires a quiet mind. If you're thinking and worrying, and, you know, when you think about doctors telling you when you're supposed to die, I always say to people, look, if the doctor said you have 2 months to live, I'll put up $10,000, tell the doctor you'll bet him you live 4 months, you'll bet $10,000.
It won't be 2 months.
No doctor ever says, okay, I'll bet you.
I'll share my little ritual going away, because this puts me in the space for the rest of the day. So for the first 10 or 15 minutes of the day, my wife and I do a meditation together. So we're practicing mindfulness, which brings us into the present moment, which is where reality happens. And then I open up my hands towards the sky and I pray to something higher than myself. Sometimes the word God comes out, but I'm asking to be shown the best way to do things, to let my love out, let my spirit out, to be helpful to people. So I'm asking, praying in the best way possible. And last, I do a little prostration. So I submit to the higher power. And that's my ritual every day. It has those three components.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we're doing. Yeah. We're tapping into something higher and submitting and serving something higher than ourselves.
And it's so similar. I mean, before I get out of bed, I have my wife as the center of our entire family, five children, a bunch of grandchildren, and I pray for each one of them individually. And then I go for a walk with my dog. It's actually dragging my dog. He's slow and walks slowly. But slow that's down. When, again, the outdoors, I'm with God. It's my prayer time. Because we live on a circle.
Beautiful way to end the show, Bernie and Dr. Bernie and Dr. Rob. We could go on, I'm sure. So, but we have to close. And I thank you, Dr. Rob, for coming on to Bernie's show. And the two of you just had a beautiful sharing of divine information. Because we all are divine.
We'll have to get you back, Rob.
Thank you. I'd love to do that. And thank you, Deborah, for facilitating that, you know, the great spirit coming through the world. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. All right. Until the next time, everyone, with Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Bye for now.
Join us next time on Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Until then, remember, be fully engaged in life, loving every moment as your unique self. In going deep within to discover ourselves, we can also discover self-love. Then, when we let our hearts make up our minds, we connect what our bodies do so well to the power of love. We can boost our ability to grow and heal along with our self-esteem. The sense of empowerment that results from this mind-body connection is one related to self-induced healing. When you add spirit to that connection, making a mind-body-spirit connection, you nourish your soul. For more insight, go to BernieSiegelMD.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.